Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Welcome to the Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy podcast. I'm Declan, the son.
And I'm Jane, the mom. This is the podcast where we talk about brutal crimes, bizarre occurrences, and get you drunk with cocktails themed around one of our stories. To lighten things up, we'd like to end our time with a chaser. Please keep in mind some of our stories might be upsetting to young or sensitive ears.
We love hearing from our listeners, so feel free to contact us by email or social media. You can find our contact info in the show notes for this episode. If you'd like to support us through Patreon, you can find us there at Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Podcast, or use the link in our show notes.
Are you tired of this reality? Us too. How about once a week you take a break and visit a different reality? In Jack Billings Presents Haunted Apartment Complex, we bring you a comedy podcast full of ghosts, werewolves, gentle vampires, and Frankenstein monstrosities made of 72 people stitched together. And somehow, that's not even the strange stuff. A proud member of the Podmoth Network. Every Tuesday, wherever you get your podcasts. There's nothing wrong with your audio. I've been a ghost this whole time. Shyamalan twist!
Hi, my name is Joe, and I'm the host of Tales, Trails, and Taverns. In this show, Rob and I like to take an active approach by hiking out to haunted, creepy, and abandoned places. We love the adventure and discovering the dark history of the locations we visit. We release a new episode every Friday on Apple, Spotify, and Patreon, as well as bonus episodes on varying Tuesdays. But don't just take my word for it, we have great listeners who have left some awesome reviews.
Oh, I love adventure, but during those times when I can't get to the Outback, I like to listen to Tales, Trails, and Taverns. Those boys dig deep into the dark history, and their first-hand experiences really delivers the excitement. This podcast is a beaut.
Back when I was the governor, I didn't have time to listen to podcasts. But now that I'm retired from politics, I can focus on my two passions, pumping iron and listening to Tales, Trails, and Taverns.
It doesn't matter who we are. What matters is that we all listen to Tales, Trails, and Taverns.
I love listening to the podcast. Wait, what's a podcast again?
It's an audio show you listen to.
Oh, like on the radio?
Sort of, yeah.
Okay. I love listening to Tulips and Tiddlywinks.
It's Tales, Trails, and Taverns.
And what do you do again?
Hike to scary places and drink beer.
Sounds terrifying. Okay. I like to listen to Terrifying Tea Time, but not on the radio.
Okay, thank you. You did great.
You're welcome. Say, you're kind of cute. Is there a Mrs. Tales, Trails, and Taverns?
Now you get it?
No actual celebrities or political figures have endorsed Tales, Trails, and Taverns. All the reviews you've heard were written, poorly, by the host, George Lennox, as well as the impersonations of celebrities, politicians, and movie characters. I meant no harm. Please don't sue me.
Alrighty, Mom. What story do you have for us today?
Oh, well, I have a story about animals. I think you're doing
so
a story about animals, too.
I'm sure my drink name will.
We did not have the same story and not have the same animals even. So yay for us.
Yes, I was a little worried when you said yours was about animals.
I know, so was I.
I don't think we've had that happen yet where we write the same story, but that's going to be
an
annoying day.
We have not, which
is for sure.
Surprising, but I'm glad that we haven't accidentally duplicated it. It's bound to happen one day, I would think. But my story, the animals in my story are crocodiles.
Ugh, terrifying. Yeah. I think I'm more scared of your animals than my animals, because mine are about lions.
Yes. And lions are super cute. I've never looked at a crocodile and thought, that's cute. I have looked at lions.
Baby crocodiles are cute.
No, they're awful.
The little yipping they do, or whatever. No. Baby crocodiles are cute.
No, thanks.
So to go with my story is the Savo Man Eaters. But to go with it, I have a cocktail called the Lion's Tail. This cocktail consists of 2 ounces of bourbon, 1/2 ounce of allspice dram, 1/2 ounce of lime juice, 1 teaspoon of simple syrup, 2 dashes of Angostura's Angostura bitters. You mix them all together in a shaker with ice and garnish with an orange twist.
Okay.
Let's give this a try.
I'm excited about the bourbon, but I couldn't find the allspice dram, so I looked up a substitute and I made the substitute, which was
the white rum. Allspice with liqueur or something.
Yeah, it's allspice liqueur, and they didn't sell it anywhere close to me, so I had to make it up.
Yeah.
And it said that you could substitute rum, Angostura bitters, and shoot, what was the other thing now? Oh, lime juice, I believe it was. Something like that. Okay. I don't know. We're going to see.
Sweet. Let's give it a try. I don't know if it'll be good or not. Lulu, you're in the way, ma'am. There you go.
I don't hate that.
It's whatever.
I don't hate it. I think this could get me drunk pretty quick. Because
it's just liquor and lime juice.
Yep, it's very bourbon forward, and once upon a time I hated bourbon and now I love it. So
yeah,
I've been persuaded to come to the dark side of alcohol living, and I like bourbon now.
Bourbon's good. It's delicious.
I still can't drink it straight. So you know,
I don't like drinking it straight unless it's like Hazel Baden or something of that quality.
Oh, Basil Hayden.
Which, yeah. Basil Hayden. Not Hayden, Basil.
you know, our friends. We've mentioned them. Gina and Ty. Shout out to Gina and Ty.
Shout out Gina and Ty.
Yes. And also shout out to Gina's friend, Marita, who is also a friend of the podcast, and her friend Greg, who I'm not sure if he's listened to the podcast or not. But we have had whiskey tasting exchanges with them, and I try every time to like it straight, to do the sample, and it always tastes the same to me. I don't care how many drinks there are, how many different types of whiskey there are. They all taste the same to me, and I hate them all. But if you put it in a mixed drink, I will drink it.
You like it. Okay. So let's talk about the Savo Man-Eaters. In March 1898, some very strange things were happening in Kenya. Around this time, a project was started to build a rail system to connect Uganda to the Indian Ocean.
Oh, this is the movie. Gotcha.
Well, so I was looking it up. I don't know if the movie was, I think the movie was based on this and another attack that happened, but I couldn't find that other one, so I just went with this one. But
okay.
So this story in particular takes place near the Savo River in Kenya. Several camps were spread out over about like 8 miles to facilitate several thousand workers building this railway. And most of the workers were, I don't know if the right word is imported, but that's the word that comes to mind. They were imported from India to help work on this, because it was to help facilitate like passages between like taking supplies from Uganda to the Indian Ocean and then shipped over to India, which was under British control at the time, I believe.
Okay.
Or they were working with Britain. But anyways, When Lieutenant Colonel John Patterson arrived to head the operation, he got word while he was in town that a cattle farmer near the Savo River was recently eaten by a lion. While humans aren't the main diet of lions, they usually chomp us up. Or, they occasionally chomp us up, I should say. So it wasn't too out of the ordinary. However, this would prove to be an unfortunate foreshadowing. Only days after John's arrival, one of the workers were dragged from his tent in the middle of the night with no noise other than the man's screams.
Oh.
So just imagine you're camping with a bunch of other people, and then you just hear one guy screaming off into the... You can hear screams trailing off into the distance, and then they go quiet.
That is horrifying, especially because it's not like... I don't know when flashlights were invented, but I'm guessing it wasn't in the 1890s.
Yeah.
Isn't that when your story starts? Was the 1890s?
Yep, 1890s.
Okay.
So the attacks would happen every few days, which coincided with the usual feeding times of lions. Because I guess lions don't need to eat every single day.
Okay.
Every 3 to 4 days, they need to eat something fairly large. So it kind of timed up with lion attacks, and everyone was kind of doing the math like, this is probably lions that are eating this, guys. The attacks persisted for over 9 months, with some months having little to no disappearances.
Oh my god.
However, when they weren't being attacked, word from nearby communities would show that the tigers got tired of Indian food.
Oh, that was really bad, that was, dude.
Yeah, that was a bad joke.
That was terrible. Bad joke that you probably couldn't resist.
Yeah, I couldn't resist it. To try and protect themselves, the workers would light huge fires along their camp and would wrap whistling thorn bushes around the camp to act as concertina wire. So, they had, tumbleweeds, basically, but they were covered in thorns. And they would just wrap that around the camp to hopefully stop them. But it wasn't very useful because the attacks persisted.
I'm guessing that the lions just jumped over it.
Yeah, or crawled under it, or through it. I mean, it's the natural habitat of the lion. Like, they know how to get through the thorns. Like,
right, they're like, whatever, we don't give a fuck.
While the attacks primarily happened late at night, not many people were able to stop the attacks or even witness it. So, everybody would just be sleeping in their tent. They've been working all day in the hot sun, so they're out cold.
And yeah.
A sneaky little lion just comes and snags a guy and drags him off.
Oh, that'd be
several
so
times
odd.
Only. Yeah, I'd be so scared. I wouldn't be able to sleep, honestly. No matter how
you'd wake
hard
up
I worked,
the next
I'd
day,
be up late at night.
And your neighbor's missing, and you're like, well, guess the lion ate that guy.
You just
guy.
Hear him scream in the middle of the night. Several times, only one lion was spotted snatching the workers, but later on in the attacks, a second lion was spotted taking two people at a time. So they'd come in together.
And oh, okay.
So they, yeah, no, they weren't grabbing both guys and going off. They were coming in together and then taking
and
them
together.
Away.
Okay. So it wasn't like I was thinking one lion took two guys and I was like,
no.
Wow, that is some multitasking. I don't know how you manage that, but good on you, bro.
Yeah. With the threat of being eaten alive hung over all the workers, many of them either quit or fled, which I don't blame them.
No
After
kidding.
The first one, I think I'd probably leave.
Yeah, I'd be like, no, I'm done.
This was causing major delays and extra costs for the railroad project, so they switched gears from building to hunting.
Okay.
Or I guess protecting themselves.
Right. I mean, I think you can do both. You don't have to stop doing one thing and start doing another.
Well, they switched all their tactics to hunting, so.
I know. I'm just saying they could have done both.
Yeah. Officials from the Indian Army and the British Army were called to help hunt the two lions attacking everyone. After arriving, the officials officially met their targets. Mr. Whitehead, who was there to help with the hunt and other aspects of the project, was attacked while he was getting off the train nearby. His assistant was killed, and he suffered 4 large claw marks running down his back.
Oh.
Yeah. So immediately, getting off the plane, basically, just fucking getting attacked by a lion. The lions were hard to get a hold of, so they started by setting traps around the area. Frank, what the fuck are you doing in here, bud? Sorry.
I saw Frank. I was watching him.
The small cat in the house, not a large cat, but my roommate's cat is sleeping on my bed right now.
Yeah, I saw him. He was climbing over your pillows like he owned the joint. He was like, this is my fucking house, bro.
Fucker. Because he comes in here and he eats Lulu's food and shits in her litter box when he has a perfectly good litter box one room over.
Well, whatever. You know.
Cats are assholes. That's the moral sometimes. Of the story. Yeah, they eat sometimes. People. They shit in
that's a good point.
Boxes that aren't theirs.
Frank, your ancestors.
Yep. So they start off by setting traps around the area with armed men watching from close by, but the lions seem more interested in eating humans.
Well, you know, slower prey.
Yeah.
Realistically.
They eventually found the den of the lions and tried to ambush it. However, that proved unsuccessful at first. But after several attempts, they successfully killed the first lion, which measured at 9'8" long.
Oh,
yeah.
That's a big
cat. A 9-foot-long cat? Holy shit.
That.
And so the lions in the Salvo range, the male lions are maneless. So they look like the female lions. Yeah,
I did not know. I thought all male lions had manes. I didn't know that.
I did too, but yeah. It was.
Well, you learned something new today.
The second tiger was found 17 days later. John stumbled across a dead goat, which had severe injuries caused by a lion. So we put up a little bit of scaffolding nearby. John spotted the second lion and hit it once before it fled. 11 days later, John saw the lion trying to stalk him and hit the tiger, causing him to flee. So now the tiger's been shot twice. The first one being in the hind leg, and the second one, I'm not sure where it hit.
Could you imagine if you're out hunting an animal and you realize that you have now turned into the hunted because that thing is hunting you back? That would be so fucking scary.
It's terrifying, yeah, because it's so easy for them to hide. They're built to hide in that environment. So they could just sneak right up on you.
Yeah. Oh, that
I've never seen a lion, but I'd imagine they're just as quiet as house cats. I'm sure they're very sneaky.
Probably. I mean, Frank just snuck in behind you and you didn't even know he was there until he got right up on you. Now imagine if he wanted to eat you.
So the next day, after getting hit the second time, the lion was found once again and immediately rushed at John. But he was able to put an additional 6 shots into it, killing the lion.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
John claimed that the lion died with part of the scaffolding in its mouth as it was trying to crawl up it and get him. Which is fucking terrifying.
That is horrific.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's using high caliber hunting rifles.
He's not using
a pea shooter, little 22. The two lion skins were sold to the Field Museum of Natural History in Chicago after killing 135 railway workers and serving 25 years as John Patterson's personal rugs.
Wow.
Yeah, so you can go to the Natural Field Museum in Chicago and check out the lions that killed all those guys, but it's just their skins because he had them made into rugs at his home. Right. So, I mean, I'd do that. That's pretty cool.
So I'm pretty sure that the movie The Ghost in the Darkness was based on this story. Yes, I don't know if you've ever seen it.
I haven't seen it. I know what it is, though. There's another movie similar to that.
So The Ghost in the Darkness was made in 1996, and it had Michael Douglas and Val Kilmer in it. And your dad and I saw that movie when we first started dating. And it was terrifying to think that that was a real story. Like, you watch it, like, if you didn't know if it was that it was a true story, you would watch it and go, well, the animals don't really act that way. Yeah. But
so
then when you find out it's real, it's friggin' scary.
So part of the like the theory, I guess, is that they had teeth injuries, so they couldn't hunt things that, like, what they normally eat.
Right.
And so humans were so much easier to grab.
100%. We're not fighting back.
Yeah.
We don't have horns and shit to defend ourselves like wildebeests do.
Exactly.
And, you know, we're not big, thick-hided. You know, we're basically like a bag of Cheetos in a vending machine. Especially if we're sitting inside a tent.
In a tent? They just gotta open the packaging and eat the snack.
Right. They're like, cool, human Cheetos. Love it. Yeah. All I had to do was stick in a dollar bill and I got my human bag of Cheetos.
Yeah, you don't see Chester Cheeto eating people. It's just lions.
Right. Oh,
and tigers, I guess, but...
Well, I think another good movie probably would.
Yeah, big cats scare me. They're so scary.
I know, but they're so pretty and they're so cute.
So cute. I love them. Yeah, they're terrifying. I think Black Panthers are the scariest because they hunt at night and they're all black.
I know. Ugh. But they are so freaking cute.
I think the cutest of the big cats is the snow leopard, the one with all the spots and the big feet.
Agreed.
That can walk on this. It's like snowshoes.
The feet are the ones that kill me. Have you seen, I've seen, and I can't even remember where it was. It was on Instagram, but it was a reel where I want to say it was a Black Panther. And it had to be in some kind of a zoo or habitat thing. And the lady talking to the cat was, it was playing with this lady. And she was like, keep your murder mittens away from me. And I laughed so loud when she called them murder mittens because the paws were gigantic with claws. Yes. And he was just, it was like a big old house cat playing. But that big old house cat could eat your face off.
I can't remember the Instagram account, but I follow these people that have a Black Panther as a pet with a Rottweiler. And
really?
The Rottweiler and the Panther like play with each other like the cat is a dog. Like, like there's a video of the Rottweiler running down a trail and this Black Panther just jumps out at him. And like, it looks like it's in slow mo. So you're like, oh no, I'm about to watch a dog
get
eaten. And then like the Black Panther just jumps off it and they start running together and like playing it. It's really cool. I can't remember the name of the Instagram account, though.
I wonder if your dad will let me get one.
I doubt it.
I 100% know he wouldn't, which just means that I shouldn't ask and I should just bring it home. Like if I had the opportunity to bring one home. What's he going to do once it's in the house? Is he going to kick it out? No. No, he's going to look at
he'll
me
like
and
it after a while.
Yeah, after a while. He hates all our favorite animals, though. It would sit on his lap and he'd be like, fucking cat. And then I'd be like, the cat belongs to you and it loves you now. And he'd get over it. He'd be fine.
Okay, let's hear this crocodile story.
Okay, so we are also going back in time on my story to World War II. And in 1945, it was in full swing. However, in hindsight, we know now, it was nearing its end, which was fine because it lasted long enough. However, soldiers involved in the battles likely didn't know that the war would be over before the year ended, because it ended in 1945. Spoiler alert, World War II ended. On a dark February night in 1945, hundreds of Japanese soldiers met their untimely demise in a historic and record-grabbing manner. Any soldier involved in a war must think that they might not survive it, but they probably envision their death to occur in a completely different manner than what happened on Ramree Island. However, this story might not be all it's cracked up to be. Let's discuss the Ramree Massacre, as it is often referred to. And I did not make up that name. That is what people call it, the Ramree Massacre.
I mean, it was.
Maybe. We'll see. So I'm going to start with where this occurred. Ramree is an island off the coast of Myanmar, formerly known as Burma. It is located in the Bay of Bengal. In 1945, the island was heavily sought after by military forces. The British had particular interest in the island because they wanted to establish an air base there so that they could launch attacks against Japan easier. But enemy forces had been occupying the island since 1942. So in the beginning of 1945, the British Indian Army made an effort to take over the island. The operation lasted about 6 weeks, with the Japanese military making efforts to maintain control of the island. By mid-February, the British were taking control over areas of the island, forcing the Japanese soldiers to flee into the mangrove swamps. The swamp was not a hospitable place, as most swamps aren't, because it had thick mud, making traveling through it difficult and slow. It was also a home to disease-infested mosquitoes, scorpions, and the wonderful saltwater crocodiles, which is the
scariest animal ever.
Yeah. It's gross. All so, those teeth.
Just some background for people that might not know about crocodiles. They don't die. I mean, they do die, but like, they don't die of old age. A crocodile can last forever. The only reason that they die is they run out of food supply for their size. Just to let people know.
No way. Really?
Yes. You can look at a crocodile, like, it either dies from something else killing it, or it dies because it runs out of food. That's how they die.
I feel like I should. It's too bad that we didn't do this episode with the One Nothing podcast, because Amanda does such an amazing job researching all of the animal stuff that if we had thought in advance to do this with them, so shout out to the One Nothing podcast. Love them, Amanda and David. And if you haven't listened to them, go listen to them. But Amanda does such an amazing job at researching like all of the animal stuff that is in their show, because they do a lot of animal stuff. I bet she would do a fantastic job. So who knows? Maybe she'll do this story in the future. I don't know. Either way, I bet she'd have some badass information about it.
Tell as of September 2023, Henry, a Nile crocodile at Croc World Conservation Center in South Africa, is believed to be the oldest known living Nile crocodile in captivity. Henry is over 120 years old and 5 meters long.
What the fuck?
Yeah. Crocodiles are fucking creepy.
120 years old. And
yes.
How long did you say? 5 meters?
So 5 meters, feet. Which I don't...
Okay.
Yeah. And I'm looking at a picture of a full-grown man sitting next to him, and it looks like the crocodile's head is probably 4 feet long. Like, it looked like it could eat 90% of this man in one bite.
That's so gross.
That's why I was saying crocodiles don't die.
I don't like it. I don't like it.
Yeah, it's fucking creepy.
So, an estimated 1,000 Japanese soldiers made the decision to escape the invading British Indian Army through the swamp rather than allowing themselves to be captured, which we just said the swamp has crocodiles in it.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, they don't die. They just eat people.
Yep.
I mean, they eat more than people, but in this case, they might eat.
They eat everything.
Yeah. This decision proved to be a drastic error for the majority of them. The tragic tale was told by several of the British officers and had made worldwide news within just a few days. At the time, it was reported that many of the Japanese soldiers had died in the swamps after being attacked by crocodiles. More details came out later with a very noteworthy book published in 1962. The book was called Wildlife Sketches Near and Far. The author was Bruce Wright, who was a Royal Canadian Lieutenant Commander, who has been credited with inventing the idea of scuba diving soldiers who could be trained to spy on the enemy from the water. So basically like the SEAL team guys from American Navy, like military. He's credited, this Bruce Wright guy is credited with coming up with the idea that you could have soldiers who were trained in scuba diving and they could spy on people from the water, which is pretty badass in my opinion, because I think the SEALs are pretty badass.
Yeah.
Yeah. After the war, Bruce became a well-respected naturalist. Bruce Wright detailed in his book about that night, stating, quote, "The scattered rifle shots in the pitch black swamp, punctured by the screams of wounded men crushed in the jaws of huge reptiles, and the blurred, whirring sound of spinning crocodiles made a cacophony of hell that was rarely been duplicated on Earth." End quote. And you know, I'm not.
That sounds one, horrifying.
Right. I'm not, like, we don't typically include quotes and stuff, but I thought that that one was pretty
terrifying.
Right. But I also included it for another reason, which we'll get to in a minute. He described how only 20 of the 1,000 Japanese soldiers survived being eaten by hungry crocodiles over the course of one terrible night. That's not very good odds.
No.
You go from 1,000 down to 20. That's pretty bad. This event was so horrific that on such a grand scale of victims that it made the Guinness Book World, the Guinness Book of World Records as the highest number of fatalities due to a crocodile attack. Totally makes sense. Which I didn't know it was a category, but apparently they made it a category. This sounds like a pretty brutal story, but it's also a bizarre one. And here's why. Because Bruce Wright was a known military man and well-respected as a naturalist and wildlife biologist, his account went unquestioned for many years. However, as more historians and reptile experts looked at the incident, more holes are getting popped into the story. So, were there crocodiles in the swamps of Ramry Island? Yes. Were there Japanese soldiers on the island? Sure. Were there British soldiers trying to take over the island for the Japanese? No question. Yes. Did the Japanese soldiers run into the swamp to get away from their enemies? Yep, they did that. However, there are several questions that have less conclusive answers, such as how many soldiers died in the swamp? Historians have reviewed Japanese military archives, which reported that around 500 soldiers escaped the swamps alive, not 20. Plus, official records of the battle from both Japanese and British military sources don't discuss the crocodile attacks at all. I would think that that would be something that would be mentioned. By the way, we lost some guys because crocodiles ate them. But it's not mentioned at all.
That's weird.
Yeah. Reports from locals and detailed in the British military records from the night actually noted that hundreds of Japanese soldiers tried to swim across the channel between the island and the mainland of Burma. Only a few of those soldiers could have made it across and likely drowned in the water or were attacked by sharks known to frequent that area. Another question came into play with the telling by Bruce Wright. Some authors and historians claim that Bruce wasn't even on the island during this operation, so his retelling of the incident could not have been his own observation. That whole quote of spinning crocodiles and the sounds, historians are saying he could not have made that because he wasn't there. So, in fact, it has been noted that Wright's 1962 book was written in first person, likely a personal account and retelling of a story. However, the section about Ramory Island is the only part of the book written in third person, like that of a story being retold by someone who wasn't there. So, like, if you told me a story and I'm telling it in third person, it means that I wasn't there. And that's the only section of his book that's like that, is that Ramory Island information. I mean, obviously, Jesus. It doesn't prove anything, but it's weird that the rest of the book is like, I did this and this happened to me. And yet that section is completely in a different method of writing. So, reptile experts also believe the story of 1,000 soldiers being eaten by crocodiles is grossly over-exaggerated. According to them, crocodiles don't behave in a frenzied manner that would cause that many deaths. Crocodiles often do feed in a frenzied way, but for short periods of time and only a small amount of food. So the level of frenzy needed to kill nearly 1,000 people has never been seen.
Yeah, because similar to the lion story that I told, I'm sure they don't eat every single day.
Right. And the next part, obviously, experts believe the environment of the swamps could not have sustained enough crocodiles to kill that many people, meaning there would have had to been a lot of freaking crocodiles in that water to kill 1,000 people. And it would have been over a long period of time. And according to the reptile experts, they don't act that way. And the swamps could not have supported that many flipping crocodiles living in them.
Okay.
Yeah. Skeptics of this tale believe it is more likely that the majority of the soldiers who died in the swamp likely died from a combination of disease, starvation, and dehydration, not from being eaten by crocodiles.
Okay.
So, still be scared of crocodiles, but maybe throw a couple of slow-moving friends in front of them.
Yes.
No, don't sacrifice your friends to crocodiles. But maybe sacrifice your friends to crocodiles.
Yeah.
Just sacrifice the ones you don't like. They're not your friends.
Yeah, exactly.
Sacrifice your enemies to the crocodiles. It's fine.
Huh. You have a chaser anyway, for us, Mom?
I do have a chaser. And oddly enough, my chaser is also animal related. I think this is just going to be an animal episode. Hopefully your chaser is, maybe your chaser is animal related. I don't know. But my chaser is from an article that I found on the Good News Network. And that, if people don't know the Good News Network, it is a really cool website. And I highly recommend going and checking it out. It's where I have gotten several of my chasers for the pod, because it's just got really interesting stories that have a positive spin. And I mean, in this world and day and age, we need some positive spin stuff. So This article was about police dogs, which I freaking love police dogs, but they took these police dogs and they trained them for sniffing out electronic storage devices like SD cards. So there's a chemical that's put on the outside of storage devices that they trained these dogs to sniff out. So it's not like they're not sniffing for cocaine. They're sniffing for these electronic devices. This training is being used by investigators who work on child exploitation cases where people are storing inappropriate material of children being exploited in bad situations. So bad pictures of kids being stored on SD cards and hard drives and things like that. Since these storage devices are used to store that material, but they're often small, like an SD card is really freaking tiny.
It's fucking tiny. Yeah.
Yeah. And you could easily miss it if it was
even
like
micro SD cards. Those are.
Yes. So the sniffer dogs are trained to find these devices, and it has led to some bad people getting caught with a bunch of incriminating evidence against them in child exploitation cases. So it's a really cool thing that I would not have thought sniffer dogs could do, but it was an international case that they took dogs to another country, our US trained dogs to another country to find a bad guy. And they found all this evidence on him because the dog found the SD cards.
I'd say a majority of SD cards, probably 90%, don't have child porn on them.
Oh, 100%.
So, but like, I wonder how many family photos are getting confiscated because a drug dog sniffed them out.
Well, okay. So in this specific case, I think it would happen last year. In this specific case, they had a guy that, like, there was an international thing looking for bad guys, and they needed, they went and searched his house. They knew he was a bad guy, but they needed more evidence against him. And they brought in the sniffer dog, who found a bunch of cards. Like, he had hidden cards underneath like couch cushions in his house.
Oh, so they knew they were looking for cards.
Evidence that this guy was storing terrible pictures of children. They already knew he was a bad guy. I think he was like a pediatrician or something. That's how fucking despicable this piece of garbage was. Damn. And he's in jail now because the dog found all of this evidence against him. So it's not like they just walked into a house and said, "Hey, go find an SD card." They knew this guy was a piece of garbage.
I thought it was like they just had SD sniffing dogs and they're just checking all the SD cards.
No, they knew this guy was a piece of shit. And they found extensive evidence against him by using the dog.
That's cool, then.
Yeah. Cool. How about you? What's your chaser?
My chaser is Joe Rogan's new special. It's called Burn the Boats. Oh. And I have to say one thing, though. The wardrobe department needs to be fired, because all I could pay attention to during his set was his tit sweat. He was sweating so much. It wasn't armpit sweat, because I was checking the armpits, too. There was no sweat on the armpits. It was just tit sweat. And just
his underboob.
Solid barcode style line just right under his tits. It was... yeah. It's okay. A really funny stand-up special, but man, that the fucking department needs to be fired.
I will say that that is definitely some. I wonder, like, okay, you think about it because you just watched that special, but do guys typically think about that? Like, where think the sweat what? Stains are? Like, do guys think about that? Do they think about, like, oh, I should, I'm going to be under hot lights, or I'm going to be at the gym and it could give me really bad, like, I don't know. Do you guys think about that?
Well, I don't really get into situations like, I mean, I also have normal sweat distribution. The sweat mostly comes from my armpits, but okay. If I knew I had a tit sweat problem, I think I'd think about it.
So, as a female who hits the gym a lot, I have to think about what my shorts are going to look like after a workout. And is color of the material going to look like I peed myself versus are my sweat stains going to not be apparent?
I guess you're right. I do think about that because I have a swamp ass problem. So I think about the material of the pants, because some pants show swamp ass a lot more than others. Like the scrubs I wear for work are linen, so they don't show swamp ass at all. But when I wear like my polyester shorts for work, like those show, it looks like I shit myself.
Okay.
Yeah, so I guess I do think about it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I wonder if, like, in general, guys just don't think about that. So maybe he or his clothing department didn't think about that. Because the color shirt that he was wearing.
It's a really nice looking shirt.
It is a beautiful shirt. It's like a peach orange shirt, which I love those colors.
Super cool looking. But
they do show sweat.
Yeah. I mean, if he had worn a black shirt, or like, I guess gray wouldn't work because gray shows it, but.
Yeah, it'd have to be like even a navy blue, a dark colored shirt probably wouldn't. Which is why I now, all of my workout shorts for the gym are dark colors. Because I have a light green pair and it looked like I pissed myself the last time I wore them.
Yeah.
It's 90 degrees here and there's no air conditioning in our gym. So I'm sweating like a pig. I look like I pissed myself. It was terrible. I swear to God, I did not piss myself.
All right. Well, I think that brings us to the end of this week's episode.
Pee stories aside.
Pissing ourselves.
And swamp ass stories aside.
I enjoyed our animal-filled episode today.
It was. Crocodiles and all.
Love you, Mom.
Love you, too. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, friends. Thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.